As we continue to navigate these unprecedented times, KCBS is looking for answers to your questions about the coronavirus pandemic and all of the issues that have arisen around it. Each weekday morning at 9:20, we're doing an Ask an Expert segment, each day trying to focus on a different piece of the big picture. Today, we're going to turn our focus to education, specifically the online components, what will happen when teachers and students start to go back to school for the 2020-2021 school year. To answer your questions, we're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Leanna Archambault, Associate Professor at Arizona State University's Mary Lou Fulton Teachers College. Professor, thanks for taking the time. How are you this morning?
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I can only imagine how much thinking has suddenly been thrown into high gear in your line of work over the last 4 or 5 months.
Yes, it's been not so much as I'm sure as epidemiologists, but definitely we've been in the sphere of education. We've been called to help share our expertise, so I'm glad to do that.
Let me talk a little bit with you before we get to our listener questions about sort of the state of the art, as it were, in the training of teachers. I mean, you have a cohort of teachers who range in age from their middle 20s maybe to their middle 60s with vastly different experience with technology and with teaching techniques. How do you look at that these days?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's kind of this misconception that the younger teachers are these digital natives that have grown up with technology and then therefore know how to use those tools to teach. And that's not necessarily the case. While they might be using them to access information or for their own personal uses, using them to convey knowledge to students is quite a different matter. So even those that are younger, we might think that they're more facile with technology, and that's not necessarily true. So those of us in teacher education have a long way to go in kind of revolutionizing the way that we prepare our teacher candidates.
Well, and as people are going through and getting a credential these days, what are they learning about these tools, about the efficacy, about the proper use, and so on?
Well, I think one of the things is that they are just that, they're tools. So the principles of communication, how we form relationships, how we care for students, all of those are still relevant. And it's just how do we employ technology to make that a little bit easier? Just as we use tools in our everyday lives for productivity, it's the same with teaching. The principles are still the same, but the methods can be updated with the technology tools.
Kind of curious for your take on, you know, how this works. Obviously, at the university level, students may have one set of abilities to absorb information at a distance. But my granddaughter, for example, a kindergartner in Texas, found herself learning from home this spring. And while things may be different this fall, obviously, she doesn't have her own log on to mom's iPad.
Yeah, I think everyone has kind of, this has been a crash course in how do we use technology as a learning platform. It's not something, it takes practice. I think adults are trying to get up to speed and to help their students as well. Even I went through the same exact thing with my 13-year-old who's in seventh grade, and even being an expert in this, it was a challenge for us.
Okay, well, let's get to questions then, and as they arise during the broadcast, go ahead and send them in by email. Nick promises he will check all the emails on the way in today, and those come at askus@kcbsradio.com. Let's start with this one here. What are steps teachers can take to help offset the inequitable learning environment students may have at home?
Yeah, I think teachers need to be asking their schools what the plan is to address the digital divide. So just as teachers have always done in making sure that they meet the needs of their students and to mobilize resources and to find those resources, if states want schools to return, as we all do, they're really going to have to commit funding to be able to address these issues and to include it as part of the plan about how we come back. So not if we come back, but how are we going to come back? One of those essential components is going to be how do we provide families with the learning resources that they need, including technology and including internet access. It's just as important as figuring out how, you know, the number of students that can come on any given day, how we're going to space them out, whether they're going to wear masks, all of that. I think if we're truly dedicated to providing quality education, then we have to commit to providing families and students with the educational resources that they need.
From where you sit, by the way, let me just detour for a moment. Are you hearing that many schools are planning some sort of blended approach where students will be there some of the time and home some of the time? And if so, how will that work for families?
Yes, I think that is the current understanding. As schools are planning, it's going to be some sort of blended learning model, where it's a combination of they'll have some classes that come on certain days and other classes that come on other days, and then on those off days there'll be remote learning or online learning from home, and that's just to be able to decrease the numbers and kind of the interaction with the numbers of students that we're educating in schools.
Okay. Next question says, I'm an elementary school teacher, third grade in the San Jose Unified District. Our district plans to have teachers and students in classrooms, but with a live feed of every class. So some students will be in the room with me, but others might be watching from home. I'm pretty overwhelmed by this. I feel like I can either teach kids who are in front of me or I can try to do something online, but both at the same time. Any advice?
Yeah, ASU is going to be trying this as well. So we've even deemed it ASU Sync. So that's our term for it.
Okay.
It's a question that many teachers and faculty are worried about. So you're definitely not alone there. I think it's going to help to have a small group in front of you while you're teaching. But educators are going to have to work on their delivery, even their acting skills. If we're honest, I think all teachers have a bit of a performer in them. And so I think it's going to be important not to be afraid to play that up so that it translates for the camera and hopefully for those students watching at home. But this is definitely going to be an experiment that we're all going to be trying.
Are there any sort of best practices or a good checklist for equipment? Several weeks ago, we had someone on during one of our segments saying, look, this was a professor of communications at San Francisco State who said, let me give people some tips about Zoom, how to light. So are school districts aware that this is a crucial part of the picture?
I don't know about districts. I mean, I would hope so. I know that we here at ASU, we have spent a tremendous amount. They are retrofitting classrooms with cameras so that it's going to make it easier for faculty, with microphones and to be able to pick up sound, and so that the classrooms are actually equipped to be able to do this. I think that it's going to be important for schools to consider how they might implement the same type of setup.
Okay, next question. What is the difference between online learning and virtual learning? What will most colleges be trying to use this fall?
Well, often those terms are used synonymously. But virtual learning, as language evolves, it's a little bit of an older term. We've gone away from virtual because it kind of suggests not real in some way. So the real difference is that online learning suggests planning, kind of an instructional design process that's been carefully implemented, often by a team of instructional design professionals. The distinction is really emergency remote learning, which is what happened last March, when we had to do the best we could to keep classes going and teachers were in the same boat. So with the benefit of summer, there's going to be the advantage of planning, hopefully. So it's likely that colleges are going to be implementing a hybrid model, as we've mentioned, some in person, some online, to be able to better maintain social distancing. But I think universities are all over the place. I think some, like the California State System, are going to be online, remaining online. Some ASU were planning to do this hybrid model. Others, are going in person and going to, if they're smaller universities, they might be able to do fully in person. So I think it varies widely.
Let me ask you, because of ASU's long experience, not only the size of the system, but this long experience in online or distance learning, but that was always kind of focused on grown-ups, wasn't it, rather than sort of college freshman level. What have you learned there that might be applicable to lots of other people going forward?
I think one of the important things that ASU has learned is that we need to provide services just like we do for in-person students. So all the support services, counselors, learning coaches that wrap around support is essential to keeping folks on track. And especially for freshmen coming in, they, learning how to set a schedule, be self-regulated, okay, now I'm going to do my classes. There's a lot of distractions out there, and currently we're all trying to survive this pandemic, and so it's going to be important to provide not only the curricular support but also the mental health aspect. And so it's going to entail a lot more people reaching out to students to see what they need and to see how we can provide that support for them.
Next question. I'm a parent of a special needs child who has an IEP due to speech and language and learning challenges. Normally, my son would receive 45 minutes a day of specialized instruction. During this last phase of distance learning, he got very little support. Most of his assignments were above his grade level. Do you have any recommendations about what I can do as a parent to keep him from falling more behind? He had some difficulty working on a computer screen to complete assignments.
Yeah, I think a lot of parents, and I, being one with kids with special needs, have found themselves in this dilemma. I think it's very important to be letting the school know, I'm having these challenges. What do you suggest? How can you? It's that communication piece, so that they know that you're there, even though they're dealing with a lot of different things. I think being that squeaky wheel is very important. Being that advocate, as special needs moms are typically. It's going to be essential to helping students with special needs, and making sure that you know the rights under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, that you have legal protections there, and that if, as a worst, you know, case scenario, if you need to call on those legal recourses, that you are willing to do that, because it's essential to get those services for your student.
Okay, next question. My understanding is that teachers are to be regularly tested for COVID-19. Given that Major League Baseball is having difficulties with all their money and how few players there are as compared to all the teachers, have you heard how the teacher population will regularly get tested for COVID-19?
Yeah, I think this is something that we're still working on. ASU is going to be testing employees, and I know they've developed a saliva-based test, and they're doing drive-through testing, and so it's we're starting to get ramp up, and I hope that we're going to be able to extend that into the community. That's one of the important aspects, is being socially embedded and helping, you know, kind of our surrounding communities. So I hope that schools are thinking about how they are going to, especially in areas like Arizona that are having huge outbreaks and widespread currently. It's figuring out the testing, especially for teachers, is going to be important.
Next question, is it possible that students who live a large portion of their lives online and don't feel comfortable in classroom settings that favor outgoing, self-assertive students will actually do better when all classes are online? Any data around that?
I think the data suggests that learning outcomes can be, that there's no significant difference. So it does depend on the student, and certainly online environment is better for some than for others, but we know that it can be just as good, if not better, in some cases. And I think especially when schools are using asynchronous communication tools like Flipgrid, for example, where students can record videos, they can actually take time, they can reflect, craft their response, they can edit it, they can redo it if they want to. Whereas in the in-person environment, you know, those students that are more socially, that like to hang back or more introverted, don't necessarily speak up. But if we use some of these asynchronous tools, it kind of allows for a more equitable voice among students, and some actually prefer it and thrive in that particular setting.
Okay, and this next question kind of gets into the technology barriers. The question says, I know some families can't afford the $40 or $80 a month for an internet account. Are there companies that offer free internet? But going even beyond that, I mean, having the technology or the acumen to work with the technology, this is a big piece of it.
Yes, and getting up to speed with using the technology, but I think it's an important part of, as we move into the 21st century, technology is not going away. It's going to be part of any type of job that our students might take, and so it's going to be essential for parents. There might be a little bit of a learning curve. I know for me, anytime I need to learn how to do something, I'm going onto YouTube and looking for a video on how to fix my sink, for example. So there's a lot of resources out there. And so even with technology, chances are there's a YouTube video to show you that you can look up to kind of show you how to do these tools. I know design teams are working to make the use of these tools easy for students and families, but it may take a little bit of time to invest in really getting up to speed on how to use them, especially for the purposes of learning.
And of course, the deeper question, I mean, I'm with you. YouTube will give me the answer to everything, but I know how to use it. I can afford an internet account and a nice fancy iPhone to look at it on.
Yes, and I think that's the important part of schools and companies being able to come together and realize that this is it's an essential component that everyone should have access to.
Okay, let's call this next question. I just pre-read it, the Pac-12 rivalry question. It says, USC just announced they were raising tuition and that all fall classes are online. This is unethical to me, but then expected from USC. Let me form that into a question that doesn't beat up so much on one school, but there is a sense of value for cost right now among a lot of college students.
I think this is a huge question, but it's a misconception that online learning is less expensive somehow to create, especially if it's a good experience and you have a team of not just content area experts, but instructional designers, graphic designers, videographers, coordinators to keep things, project directors to keep things on track. There's a lot of human capital that go into creating a quality online course or program that not everybody sees that investment, but it's there. I think that's kind of how I look at it, is in order to create, just like anything in life, you're going to get what you pay for.
Okay. And that kind of leads into the next question. Is there some kind of standard for how to deliver curriculum from a distance? How much on-camera time versus reading material, graphical material, et cetera?
I don't think that there's necessarily one size fits all. I think schools have always been kind of a local community, and I think even down to the subject area, what works in English language arts, might not work in the physical hands-on lab science, and we have to get real creative on how to do that in an online setting. So I think this notion of blended learning is going to be important, and that's how do we strategically combine online and face-to-face. It might be that teachers create videos for students to watch when they're at home, and then they come together, when they have that in-person time, that's more about building relationships, mentoring, feedback. There's not a one way to do that. There's a number of strategies. And for teachers who might be interested, I'll just say colleagues and I have developed a free open source book called K-12 Blended Teaching, and it's available at edtechbooks.org. It covers a wide array of approaches that might be helpful.
Okay, we'll make sure we get a link to that into the version of this that goes up on our website at kcbsradio.com/askanexpert. Thanks. Let's see if we can fit in a couple more here. I have two high school students at home. What I saw at the end of the school year was not encouraging. Lots of wasted time. I could tell the kids had tuned out. It didn't seem like the teachers had the resources or training to do distance learning. Am I right?
Yes. In an answer, yes. Teachers were put in a terrible position last spring and were not well prepared either as part of their teacher preparation program or as their continuing professional development. So based on research I've worked on, only about 4% of teacher education programs offered any type of student teaching or field experience in an online setting. So I think the field now is seeing the need, not just in a pandemic, but for blended approaches that do combine the best of face-to-face instruction and online instruction. Like, that's the future of education. We need to work with teacher candidates so that they are better prepared to teach in this era.
All right, and I think we'll get down to one last question for you, Professor. This one says, this may sound like a silly question, but I find it really hard to understand people when doing these Zoom meetings. So my question is, how are students going to learn if they can't hear or see what's going on?
Yeah, I'm kind of suffering from Zoom fatigue myself, having a lot of meetings via Zoom. It isn't perfect, but certainly if there's audio or video problems, it can really leave you wondering, like, what is the benefit here? I think, one of the things is that Zooming all day can be quite exhausting. It goes back to being strategic about the time that we're asking kids to spend synchronously with tools like Zoom or Skype, and how is that time best spent? And are there asynchronous approaches, like the video discussion that I mentioned with tools like Flipgrid or VoiceThread, that might allow for more voices in the classroom to be heard and, so that students can take their time in crafting those? I think it's important to remember that not all instruction has to happen in real time.
Well, thank you for your time this morning. It's been instructive, and I do definitely appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thanks. My pleasure.
Okay. Bye-bye. That's Dr. Leanna Archambault. She's an associate professor at the Arizona State University Mary Lou Fulton Teachers College. And that wraps up this morning's episode of Ask an Expert. As we pointed out, we'll have it up online for you. It takes a couple of hours usually to get everything massaged in terms of both the audio and the text transcript. And she did mention an open source book, which could be a great resource for teachers all the way from K through 12 in terms of dealing with the new reality of blended classrooms, online learning, some in-person teaching. We'll make sure we have a link to that book within our post on kcbsradio.com/askanexpert. And just a reminder, each day's episode, you can listen live, but you can also, using the radio.com app or the radio.com desktop location, you can rewind live radio. You can go back and hear an answer over and over again. You can also use that app to pass along by sharing the episode to which you're listening. In fact, that rewind function and the share function work for anything in the last 24 hours on KCBS. Something to keep in mind.